If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this new edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we're looking back on the closest ever finish of the women's tour. We'll be hearing from Becky Story of Cams Basso, who finished Britain's leading women's world tour race as the best British rider. We'll be discussing the Brother UK-sponsored Green Zones and the wider context of the circular economy. And with that in mind, we'll be hearing from Dr. Carlos Ludlow Palafox, the founder and CEO of Enval, who served the Women's Tour as recycling partner. We'll be looking ahead to the Women's and Juniors edition of the Cycle Classic, and we'll be hearing from the race director and founder Colin Clues on how the race was saved from a funding crisis that threatened its future. And finally, we'll be looking ahead to British Cycling's National Road and Time Trial Championships, which take place later this month in Dumfries and Galloway. I'm joined today by my co-host, Phil Jones, the Managing Director of Brother UK. Phil, good to see you.
Hiya, Tim. Great to be here.
And I'm joined by Larry Hickmott, the founder and editor of Brother UK-sponsored Velo UK. Laz, thanks very much indeed for joining us.
Yeah, no worries. It's good to be back and doing this.
Well, let's dive straight in and look back at this year's thrilling edition of the Women's Tour, a race that Brother UK has sponsored since its inception back in 2014, and which we've served since 2016 as official print and results partner. This year, for the first time, we served also as the presenting partner of the Green Zones, and we'll discuss in detail how that fits into our wider commitment to sustainability. As far as the racing was concerned, well, we couldn't have hoped for better. After 6 days of action and excitement, the race was decided by a single second and remained in play until the very last metre. Elisa Longo-Borghini of Trek Segafredo and Grace Brown from FDJ Nouvelle Aquitaine Futuroscope took the race to the final finish line in Oxford, where, as we've said, Longo-Borghini, the Italian road race champion, clinched overall victory by a single second. There were other great performances too. Lorena Vibes of Team DSM won three of the six stages to seal overall victory in the points competition. Elise Shabby was the Queen of the Mountains, and her Canyon SRAM squad won the team competition. Becky Story was crowned best British rider after finishing 15th on the final general classification, 3 points ahead of Joss Loudon from Uno X. Lizzie Holden of Wahoo La Colle finished third in that competition by finishing 21st on GC. Our stage winners were Clara Capponi of FDJ Nouvelle Aquitaine Futuroscope, who claimed the opening stage into Bury St Edmunds. Lorena Vibes of Team DSM won stages 2 and 3. Grace Brown won stage 4 from Wrexham to Welshpool, billed as the hardest in women's tour history. And Longo-Borghini won the epic 5th stage to the summit of Black Mountain to set up the following day's exhilarating climax in Oxford, where Vibes was again first across the line. In summary then, an amazing edition of the Women's Tour, and one that lived up to all the pre-race hype. We were promised a GC battle, teed up by a grueling parkour, and we got one. Phil, you were the only one of the three of us, I think, who got boots on the ground at this edition of the race. You went to stage 4, which of course passed our Brother Industries recycling facility in Rouabon. How did it look from the roadside?
Wasn't it exciting? For sure, one of the best editions that I've ever seen. And I managed to grab hold of Andy Hawes and do a quick interview with him for our Instagram feed, which Rebecca Richardson was looking after on the day. And without a doubt, Andy, who was the route director, from his perspective, has said it was one of the most difficult tours that he'd ever designed. And who could forget that sort of stunning Black Mountain stage where Elisa Longo-Borghini just absolutely powered away to take that stage, which was a bit of a surprise to me, actually. I thought that was very much a Cassie Nuodoma sort of stage. She's an absolutely brilliant climber. So to see Elisa Longo-Borghini in the form that she was, I think, was brilliant. The crowds were amazing. I don't know if you saw some of the photography from the last stage, particularly in Oxford. Some really iconic photography there. Huge crowds out supporting the riders. I was delighted because, of course, on the Wrexham stage, which went went right past our factory, managed to get almost a complete factory shutdown and have a huge number of our other people at the side of the road. So all in all, I have to say it was a stunning race and I really personally enjoyed watching it.
Larry, this was one of the few British races that you weren't able to get to this year. Did you follow it on television?
The only way I follow any race these days is online, simply because I'm literally at a keyboard from morning through to night. But I did see one of the riders in the race the next day when I was at the Yorkshire Championships, and she testified that the legs were a bit sore and that it was a very, very tough race, especially after the first two sprint stages.
The big change, I think, from last year, and we'll hear a little later from Becky's story on this, is that the course was much, much more challenging. The division between the climbing stages and the sprint stages was more equal. And as Phil and I said in our last edition of the podcast, the race really was likely to be shaped by the two stages in Wales, and indeed it was. Looking ahead, Phil, do you see a harder, more challenging format for the women's tour? I mean, that's certainly the pathway that the Tour of Britain has followed, and might even be seen as, you know, evidence for the maturity of a race.
Well, based upon what we saw for this race, I'm sure and I hope that Andy will go away and obviously after consultation with Mick, the overall race director, that we will see some more challenging stages in the future. But of course, we always have to remember that these routes are very much designed around where the money's coming from. So wherever a council is hosting a stage, either hosting a start or a finish, Andy has to sort of fundamentally plan the route in between that. So I know he will always try and make that route as challenging as possible. But I think from the rider's perspective, it balances the race out really well, because it just means that we get a more exciting race and the spectators do too. And certainly when you looked at some of the helicopter shots, it absolutely shows off the best of the country, which is partly what it's all about. But without a doubt, the riders really enjoy it. The international riders coming over to ride the women's tour, when you hear them in the interviews, they all say how much they enjoy the race.
Absolutely. I mean, a truly international field again. Corin Lebecki, the former US champion, rolled out for Jumbo-Visma. Ellen van Dijk, the Netherlands' newly crowned World Hour record holder, she rolled out for Trek Segafredo. Tennille Campbell from Trinidad and Tobago, racing in the colours of Team Bike Exchange Jayco. I mean, it really was a world-class field. The British riders, though, were far from outclassed. You know, Fifer Georgie, great example, reigning British road race champion, who did an outstanding job for Team DSM teammate Lorena Vibes. On stage three especially, and I remember watching her guide Vibes around all those traffic islands on rain-slicked roads in a hectic finish. I mean, talk about going deep. As following the race online, I'm not sure if you'd been able to form an opinion on whether, you know, ultimately in Oxford, Trek Segafredo won the race or whether FDJ lost it. I mean, they seem to be attempting sort of ill-advised multitasking in trying to win the stage with Clara Capponi, while attempting to clinch the overall victory with Brown, who was distance, of course, on that final crucial run-in. Longo Borghini took the initiative, sprinted to third, and the rest is history. I don't know whether you managed to catch any of that action.
I haven't caught the action, but certainly I pick up the odd thing here and there. And as far as I know, obviously no offence to any of the British girls in the race, but having Grace Brown right up there being an Aussie and me being an Aussie, it would have been nice to have seen her win it. But as far as I know, she did get some bonus seconds and was looking good for that. And I think they actually lost the race rather than Longo Borghini winning it convincingly. I think if they had realised that they needed to get Grace up in that sprint, perhaps she might have been able to. But bunch sprints and bonus seconds, they can be very cruel sometimes. If you haven't got a sprint on you, you can lose GCs like that with bonuses.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a testament too, I think, to the way that Sweet Spot had structured the race, and, you know, with that balanced parkour, which we mentioned earlier, and the time bonuses and everything else. And all of that, of course, queued up by stage five from Pembrey Country Park to Black Mountain, which was billed, wasn't it, as, you know, the stage with genuine potential to shape the race.
Well, one thing I just want to say about Pembrey, having been to Pembrey for the Junior Tour of Wales, which in itself is a huge race for junior riders. I was there last year and there were no people there. These were the best juniors, people like Josh Charling. And yet, when you look at the pictures of the crowd that was at Pembrey for the women's tour, which was huge, that's a demonstration what a draw card women's racing can be.
Phil, we said after the tour series, didn't we, that the women's racing was every bit as good as the men's, and if the Tour of Britain is anything like as good as this women's tour, I think we're in for another great race in September.
Yes, without a doubt. And when you see these big stars come over, the stars that people are seeing on the television on Eurosport or GCN, riding these big world tour races like Paris-Roubaix, and then they're here on the UK roads, I think without a doubt, the crowds were out to support them. And I've got to say, Larry, I thought Grace Brown was just brilliant. I thought she was excellent on the road. She was great in her interviews. She really was emerging as a really fantastic rider who I think gave Elisa Longo Borghini a real run for her money. And I think on that, that Elisa Longo Borghini, that wily old racing head, she knew what needed to be done and she absolutely got herself positioned correctly. And I think a big shout out to Eleanor Baxted as well, the Welsh rider with Trek Segafredo. I thought she was working ever so hard, actually. If you see on all the stages, she was doing a great job, just policing the bunch and just sort of chasing the little bits down. And I think she was also quite pivotal in bringing Elisa Longo Borghini to the line on stage five.
Yeah, 100%. A really good showing from all the British riders, but as we say, the best showing of all came from Becky Story of Cams Basso. And naturally, everyone at Brother would have been especially pleased because, of course, Becky broke through last year with Brother UK on form, the team now known as Brother UK Orientation Marketing. Becky is from the Isle of Man. She's a self-confessed latecomer to the sport, but my goodness, she's making up for lost time. She graduated, if that's the right phrase, last year from On Form to Cams Basso and made her professional debut at the 2021 Women's Tour. She'd already shown extremely strong performances in the National Road Series, you know, particularly by finishing second at last year's Rydale Grand Prix. This year she's gone one better in the National Series by winning arguably the most prestigious race of them all, the Lincoln Grand Prix. Let's hear now from Becky on the morale-boosting crowds and strength-sapping climbs of the Women's Tour, the benefits to the GC battle of a balanced parcours, her standout performance on Black Mountain, and how a Women's World Tour race compares to the National Road Series.
Well, the crowds are always amazing. I remember last year, it was the first time I actually experienced it, you know, when we were riding through the towns and you see all the school kids on the side of the roads and it gives you goosebumps when you ride past just because of the noise. And it was the same again this year, but, you know, again, on a bigger scale. The weather helped. On the nice days, we had good weather and it was really nice this year, actually, because a lot of that times before the stages, we could, like, speak to people and, you know, actually spend some time with, like, some of the kids. And that's what it's about, really, isn't it? You know, just kind of inspiring that next generation. And they just love it. I love meeting them all. And, you know, last year, a lot of the stages were, you know, flat sprint stages. And we obviously had the time trial last year, which was exciting. But because the other stages were so flat, the time trial kind of just determined the GC and the rest of the race was very, very predictable. Whereas this year, it was kind of something for everyone. You know, we had the first two stages were a bit more, you know, one for the sprinters. And then once you got into Wales, one for the climbers. And certainly the more kind of terrain that I enjoy, that I could get stuck into. And that made it less predictable. I mean, we knew the GC would shake up once we hit the Black Mountain. It makes it exciting. It brings a whole new dynamic to the race. And I think it was Dean, actually, at the end of that stage said to me, you know, did you look around and look at the kind of riders that you were riding with? And be honest with you, you know, no, like it was, I mean, obviously I look back now and I think, wow, you know, to be riding with the likes of, you know, some of the names that you mentioned, it is incredible, but it was just so hard. I was just like literally just trying to, like you say, stick to those wheels like glue. And having Danny Christmas in my ear was just, there was no one else I'd rather have guide me up that mountain or through every stage, because she's just been so valuable to our team. And I keep telling everyone, but she's just a breath of fresh air, obviously straight out of the women's peloton. She knows those riders inside and out. And I felt so in control because of her guidance, and I just had to finish off the job for the girls. So yeah, it was a good day. Obviously there is a step up, like there'd be no denying that, you know, that you ride with the best riders in the world when you race in a world tour race. But I definitely think that it's more achievable than most people would think. You know, the standard of racing in Britain is so high, and I think a lot of people underestimate the amount of talent that we have in the British scene. And it's not easy to win races like Lincoln GP or the National Series, that's for sure. It doesn't matter if you're a professional bike rider. There's a lot of people that come from the World Tour Peloton and they struggle to get on the podium at a National Series. And that's just because of the quality of riders that we have. So it's definitely a lot more achievable than people think. It's just having that, I guess, belief that, you know, you deserve to be in that peloton, even though you've not been racing for as long as the other riders have been.
Well, good to hear from Becky there, guys. Some wonderful insights. I mean, every time I speak to Becky, I'm hugely impressed just by how grounded she is. She's super level-headed, but, you know, her passion for the sport really shines through. I think it's fair to say that Becky's got a, you know, very, very bright future. She looked very comfortable, Phil, didn't she, on Black Mountain, riding with the strongest climbers in the world.
Yes, it really was brilliant to see. You're right, very proud that, which has been a very, very tiny part of that story. Ultimately, all we do is provide platforms for riders to fulfil their potential. So it's wonderful to see her go from strength to strength, honestly speaking, and really compete with some of the best riders in the world. And yes, it was lovely. You know, it's just cracking to see her doing her thing on Black Mountain and competing with some of these best riders. And as far as the future's concerned, then I'd love it if we saw more of the female UK riders make it onto the world tour. One of the challenges we've got now is probably the women's tour is one of the only big times when the riders can really show themselves, and where all the DSs are here and all the right people are in the right place. And so to put a good show on, I think, on the women's tour is something that if you really want to go up that world tour ladder, that is the showroom you do it in. And I think she did a fantastic job.
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely the pinnacle women's race on these shores. Larry, it was interesting, I thought, to hear Becky describe a move from the Women's National Road Series to the Women's World Tour as achievable. And she said, didn't she, quite specifically, that, you know, World Tour riders who turn up at national events in Britain sometimes struggle even to get onto the podium. And she said that winning the Lincoln Grand Prix was not easy, which might be the understatement of the year. And she's clearly impressed by the strength and depth of the domestic women's peloton. How accurate a barometer do you think is Becky of, you know, the wider strength of British women's road racing? Is she the exception, or increasingly, you know, are riders as talented as Becky, you know, the rule nowadays?
The performance in Lincoln, she was head and shoulders. The way that she managed to have so much left at the end to win the way that she did just proves just what a talent she is. She's still new to the sport. She's still learning. She will have learned an awful lot from that stage on Black Mountain and the other stages as well. So she's definitely one of the leading lights. I think the difficulty in knowing whether a rider's going to make it in the world tour or not is you can have riders who can dominate or who can be successful over here, but they're at their limit and they can't make that step up to world tour, whereas Becky showed that she can. There's still more in the tank. She can go to the world tour and she can make that level. The level here, it's interesting the way that Cams Basso picked up Sammy Stewart just before the race, and then Sammy then got in a break on her own and showed the world just what a great talent she is. Danny Shrewsbury, exactly the same. So what we're having is you're seeing a lot of these top British riders go into a team like Cams Basso, or the Drops team, and they're racing in Europe now. And that gives a chance to the local girls to prove themselves without the other girls here. I think their performances, Danny's performance, Sammy's performance, and Becky's performance in that race, Women's Tour, should be a great inspiration to the local girls.
So, Tim, I just want to raise another quick point around this, which is something, again, is a bit hidden from view, how riders make it in the post-Brexit world. And I had a good chat with Tim Harris, actually, who's the DS of EF Education, TIBCO SVB. Obviously, Tim, a former national road race champion, been DS in the Men's World Tour. I was just having a chat with Tim on the line at Wrexham and just said, you know, how are things? And he just said, wow, the grief to get here has been unbelievable. We've had to leave deposits with customs because potentially we've got all these bikes on the roof, so they need this huge sort of duty down payment. And he said it really was a lot of work for us to get here, number one. So we definitely need big races like the Women's Tour, you know, UCI level races, in order for the teams to come here. If they don't come here, then we haven't got the right people viewing the right riders. That's the first point. And the second point is obviously now with travel restrictions from the UK to the EU, it also limits the number of days that UK riders can spend in Europe. So that means with training camps and races that actually, if you really are a European team looking back at UK riders, there's this new dynamic for UK riders, which is different than riders who are EU citizens. So it's a thing. And what it may do is it may narrow opportunity in the future for UK riders. And I think we've all got to be aware of it. And hopefully there will be ways around that so that it doesn't actually stop someone making it up to the world tour.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I learned about this issue last year, interviewing Harry Tanfield and then Anna Henderson. It's tempting to think, isn't it, that, you know, the issue's gone away because we're a year down the line and other Brexit issues are commanding the headlines. But, you know, the movement of British athletes and other British professionals like people in the performing arts, you know, that whole issue seems to have fallen from the news agenda. But you're right, Phil, you know, it is a very, very live issue. British riders have always had to fight harder than their continental cousins, I think, to forge professional careers in mainland Europe. And certainly what we don't want to be doing is putting barriers in their way. So, you know, let's just keep an eye on that situation. Larry, you wanted to come in there.
I think COVID is also an issue. I was speaking to a team that was in the race and they had about 7 or 8 riders that were down through injury and through COVID and illness. And what that did is opened the way for other riders to join the team because they needed more riders. So there are lots of things like that. And the whole Brexit things, as you say, with Harry Tanfield and others, that was a big issue and sounds like it still is.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so easy to think, isn't it, that because an issue isn't leading the 6 o'clock news bulletin that it's disappeared. But, you know, if Tim Harris is to be believed, and harder to imagine a more impeccable source than Tim, well, it sounds like, you know, it's still very much a live issue. Let's turn to another issue now, and that's the circular economy. But what is that? Well, it's an economic and social context in which businesses, and indeed any public or social entity, now conducts itself. We're talking about sustainability and environmental awareness. We're talking about recycling more and consuming less. We're talking about, frankly, a professional bike race taking steps to ensure that riders don't litter the countryside with gel wrappers, and even that those gel wrappers are recycled rather than dumped into a landfill. Now, Brother UK really can walk the walk on sustainability as well as talking the talk. We've won 2 Queen's Awards for enterprise and sustainability. All of our UK offices are zero waste to landfill sites. And Brother Industries, our high-tech recycling plant in Moorabbin, well, that's been certified as a zero carbon facility by no less a body than the Carbon Trust. Our Brother also has a global framework for sustainability. Our Vision 2050 strategy, published by our head office in Japan, you know, that aims to make the entire company carbon-free within 30 years. So just to zero in for a moment on the green zones at the Women's Tour, which of course Brother UK sponsored, well, there were 26 of them in total. And if you add up each of those 200 meter zones, then, you know, that's more than 5 kilometers in which riders over the course of those 6 stages could safely and responsibly dispose of gel wrappers. Those gel wrappers are now on their way to Enval, which is a high tech recycling business in Cambridgeshire. And they use a proprietary technique called microwave-induced pyrolysis. They extrude the aluminium from the foil wrapper, heat the paper and the plastic without incineration. We're not talking about burning, we're talking about heating. They turn that paper and plastic into a compressed gas, and then the gas is turned into pyrolysis oil. And pyrolysis oil can be used for all kinds of different purposes, including making new plastic products. Brother Industries, the plant in Moorabbin, passed by the Women's Tour on Stage 4. Well, that has different but similarly advanced processes. It's where we refurbish and remanufacture laser and inkjet toner cartridges. We're going to hear now from Dr. Carlos Ludlow Palafox, who gained his PhD at Cambridge University, no less, and is the CEO and founder of Enval. Let's have a listen to Carlos.
As a company, we started trying to recycle flexible packaging, but very, very specifically in the very early days, something called plastic aluminium laminates, which are the flexible packaging that not only has plastic, but also has a layer of aluminium foil in between. And you will know this from baby food pouches, toothpaste tubes, and very important in this case, the gel wrappers, the gel tubes that are used by sports people. Because we were recycling these things, we had a contract to help one of the companies that produced these gels. From there, one of the participants in the Women's Tour got in touch with us saying, I'm a keen recyclist. I would love if more of my colleagues could recycle these things. Can I put you in touch with the organizers of the Women's Tour? And she did. Of course, it was a fantastic opportunity for not only for recycling material, obviously for promoting what we're doing and for promoting also the credentials of the tour itself and the sustainability that they want to achieve. So one thing led to the other. The organizers of the tour got in touch with us, and we agreed that Enval would be the recycler of the flexible packaging that gets collected, which we know is going to be primarily be gels and energy bar wrappers and things like that. that will be collected in the Green Zones sponsored by Brother. It's a great opportunity that happened a little bit by chance, but it's fantastic to be involved. Essentially, pyrolysis is a process in which you break molecules, and you break those molecules with heat. A lot of people will know that plastics are polymers. There are many types of polymers. Plastics are polymers. Paper is a polymer, and the proteins that form our muscles. So you can pyrolyze, break those polymers, irrespectively of whether it's plastic, or whether it's paper, or whether it's my arm. Obviously, the little units that you form, once that you break the molecule, will depend on what that molecule was in the first place. So pyrolysis overall is the process of using heat in the absence of oxygen, and this is very important, to break that molecule. Everything that we try to do at the moment is because of the circular economy. It is such an obvious thing to understand, in my opinion, that we need to be more circular in everything we do, not only in plastics, but in many of the aspects of our life. Yes, we are at the forefront of circularity in the plastic world, and it's great to be there. I think there's still a huge road ahead of us to actually become a more circular society. Circularity in itself is a very complex thing. It's one of the parts of the puzzle. I do think that it is very important to be more circular. There's still a long way to go in that sense.
Well, good to hear that from Carlos. I mean, you know all about the circular economy, Phil, from leadership of Brother UK.
Oh, yes, it's high on the agenda of all businesses. Certainly, if you look at the public sector, government, if you want to do business in any sort of large enterprise nowadays, you've got to be demonstrating that you are making great progress in what we call scope 1, scope 2, scope 3 emissions globally, and also subscribing to things like the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which we do as an organization. I really love businesses like Carlos's, because he's one of these new businesses, and a lot of this future carbon capture, retrieval, storage, recycling, upcycling, everything to do with the circular economy. We need new innovation. And clearly what Carlos has brought to market is some new innovation. And applying that then to the women's tour, just looking at the wrappers for gels, these small things can become huge things overnight. Demonstrating what can be done, working in partnership with Enval. I guess we want to just sort of send a message to all the bike races globally to say, look, this can be done. It's not difficult to do. The technology now exists. We've just got to make sure we collect the stuff and we send it over there and it gets treated and that's all fine. So I think, you know, we've said before on a previous podcast that bike racing still has a fairly big CO2 footprint. Let's be honest about it. You know, when we look at the vehicles that are used, the huge buses, washing machines on the buses, the flights that are made, all of these sorts of things. So there's a very, very big footprint around the sport. And at some stage, someone's going to need to be looking at that and then saying, well, what can we do actually to bring down the CO2 footprint of the supporting infrastructure around cycling? Clearly, when the cyclists are on the bikes, there's no issue, but it's fundamentally the convoys and the A to Bing of those convoys, and then this sort of wider national movement of these huge convoys of vehicles, which does create a sort of a rather large CO2 footprint for this sport. So I think we will have to start somewhere, don't we? And I think in the future, look, we're starting at the moment with something small like the gel wrappers. But of course, we're going to see things like, as battery ranges are extended, the vehicles in the convoy being EV, electric vehicles. We're going to probably see coach technology coming, where batteries are going to be in the large coaches and large vehicles supporting the convoy. But that could be 10 or 15 years away before we see that. We're going to see e-motorbikes and e-scooters. So as the convoy is trundling through with the TV motos and all the regulators, they're likely to probably be on e-scooters in the future. So that's going to need better charging infrastructures in all of the places that these tours go to, whether it be the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, or the Women's Tour, or the Tour of Britain. The convoy is going to need charging infrastructure. And is that here today? No, it's not. But I think someone somewhere needs to be looking at this whole bigger picture and actually developing a plan for the sport of cycling in order that it does its bit for the future too.
And do you see a role, Phil, for responsible businesses in shaping that plan, you know, particularly for companies who invest in professional cycling? You know, we've just seen, haven't we, you know, over the course of the Women's Tour, how a business like Brother UK, how a business like Enval can work in partnership with a race organiser like Sweet Spot to create a clean and responsible race and ensure that, you know, gel wrappers don't end up at the side of the road, don't end up in a landfill site even, you know, but end up being converted into oil for a second use. And, you know, in this case, clearly the support both of Brother and of Enval has helped Sweet Spot to deliver a responsible race?
Yes, for sure. And there's a commercial play here that there will be a commercial need for the sport to change globally, because what's happening is sponsors like Brother will be looking at sports and sectors and saying, look, this is what we do, and we only now want to sponsor sports which also align with our sustainable aims. And if sports are not offering benefit or offering evidence that they too are moving in that generalized direction of travel, you may well find that you're going to have sponsors peeling away. And that's never a good thing. So I think the hard commercial side of this will come to bear. And regardless of what sport you are in, that it needs to be actually demonstrating, as businesses are having to demonstrate, what it is we are actually doing. We need to evidence what we do. I'm sat here in a London hotel at the moment, Tim, recording this with you. But one of my jobs to finish today is our statutory accounts. And part of that statutory accounts is for us to detail our Scope 1 and Scope 3 emissions under the UN agreement to make them legally statutory available as a set of numbers and statistics. So maybe in the future, each team might need to do that at World Tour. And then the sport might need to wrap that up somehow and present that data back to a governing body, whether it be the UCI or somewhere else. So we are doing those things because from a statutory perspective, we have to do those things as a business. But fundamentally, it kind of always starts here. And then what it does is it moves over. So I guess the sport can look at some of the things that business does and then go, actually, in the future, we may well be asked to do the same. And so therefore, I think we're going to see people like ESG officers as part of a World Tour team setup, whose job it is to measure those miles, to look at that CO2 footprint, and to present that back to the world.
I mean, that's a really encouraging development, you know, that businesses might place a positive pressure on race organisers to raise their game in the sustainability stakes. Just as a postscript, you know, I spoke earlier this week to Hayley Simmons, a rider with CAMS Basso, and like, you know, Carlos Ludlow Palafox, she was somebody who left Cambridge University with a PhD in chemistry. Now, Hayley returned her used gel wrappers to Enval in a special pouch provided by SIS, and then contacted Enval to see if they'd be interested in working with the Women's Tour. You know, a year down the line, the partnership has delivered. Yeah, I think that's a brilliant example of how change can be effective from within. And we're hoping to hear more from Hayley in a future episode, when she's recovered from a knee injury that sadly kept her out of this year's Women's Tour. Let's turn our attention now back to racing. We're going to talk about the Women's and Junior Cycle Classic, which last year it really served as a beacon for a return to normality in elite British road racing after all the disruption of COVID. The race attracted a huge field of 140 riders, which was the largest peloton ever assembled for an elite women's race in the UK. And guess what? It turned out to be a thrilling race. This year, however, the race came very close to folding after finding itself at the centre of a dispute between its principal funder, a private individual called Pete Stanton, and British Cycling over the Federation's policy on transgender cyclists. Let's hear now from Colin on the precise nature of the challenge he faced and how he overcame it. I caught up with him earlier, and I began by asking him if he could remember his precise reaction when he heard that Pete, who'd been tremendously generous to the race in the past, would no longer be funding the event.
I think I do remember my response, and I think probably one or two words are not suitable for this blog or any other publication. But as quickly as I thought that, I had to accept Peter's opinion was Peter's opinion. Whether or not I shared that view was immaterial, and really it was a case of what are we going to do to actually save the race. We therefore looked at ways of actually solving this. By that time, various women's rights groups had got involved, and I'm very grateful to them in a way, because certainly they increased the exposure to worldwide for the crowdfunding initiative that we set up. To say that it brought tears to your eyes, some of the contributions that were being made, you know, the one I quoted to so many people is to receive an email from someone in Nicaragua, a lady in Nicaragua saying, you know, I don't have much money, but I'm going to give £15 towards saving this event because I believe so much for women's rights. in sport. And it's little things like that. You start and feel inhumanity when you get things like that happening. And that was repeated over and over again. And in fact, nearly 600 people contributed to that crowdfunding. We wanted to raise 15,000 from that source. We managed to raise over 20,000. And with a further contribution from British Cycling to make the event happen as well, they were keen as anyone to keep the event live this year. We managed to pull the funds together. And as I say, we are happily going ahead now. The outcome has also been very, very positive in that we were wanting really to get a further long-term sponsor involved. And the publicity that it all engendered has actually brought that about. And we are in the process now of just currently signing a 3-year deal commencing next year, which will safeguard the women's race until 2025. So it's absolutely excellent news still to come, and we can't be happier that it's turned out this way, for not just for ourselves, but for the women that we want to create this race for.
So there we are. Good to hear there from Colin Clues, the race director of the Cycle Classic, and shocking to hear just how close we came to losing one of the most cherished races on the British calendar. Larry, had we lost the Women's Cycle Classic, what kind of hole would it have left in the fabric of elite women's road racing in this country?
It would have been a major, major loss. You've only got to look at the way that it kickstarted the season last year in 2021 with that huge record field. And even this year, I'm looking at races which are struggling to get 50, 60 riders. And yet Colin has still got over 100 riders wanting to do it. And the women know that luck is involved in this race. The women know that it's a tough race and that they may not have a chance of victory, but they still want to be part of it. It's a leading race. It's definitely one of the leading races, along with Lincoln. It's a huge event.
And Phil, just asking you to put on your commercial hat for a second. I mean, crowdfunding can seem like a last resort, but clearly it did the job for Colin. Can you see other races turning to crowdfunding? I mean, it works, I guess, if you have a passionate fan base, but you know, far from the most stable form of revenue, I guess.
Yeah, we've gone over this topic quite a lot, haven't we, Tim, the sustainability of the sport. And the first thing is, I'm super delighted that the race was able to get crowdfunded and get what it needed and get the shortfall effectively raised. Is that the future for how all races are funded? Well, I hope not, because of course it becomes quite fragile if that is the case. But of course, I've spoken extensively here that actually the sponsorship environment is really rather tough for any sport with business, because business is still emerging from the pandemic. We've got quite uncertain trading and economic conditions ahead of us at the moment. And as a result, it makes people a little bit hesitant to start throwing money at things. So I think we're not out of the woods yet as far as the way funding works and how the sport is funded. But in the short term, I'm just rather delighted that we are going to see this race go ahead.
Now, I thought the most interesting aspect of the commercial theme was that the race had gained a new sponsor, and you know, one that's pledged investment for 3 years, according to Colin. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, that old phrase, perhaps, any publicity is good publicity. That a controversy would attract a new sponsor. Well, I guess the investor would say, look, you know, this is a race that's important to women's cycling. It's wonderful that it's been saved, and this is something we'd like to support going forwards. Just from a sporting perspective, Larry, I saw the provisional start list on your website earlier in the week. Who is your money on? There's some tremendous riders, you know, double world champion Zoe Backstead, Josie Nelson, whose sister Emily won it a couple of years ago. Then there's Bex Durrell, and anyone who watched the Tour Series would have seen Bex getting stronger round by round. And of course, she won this race in 2016. Emma Jeffers was another standout performer at the Tour Series, wasn't she? She won 2 of the 6 rounds. So, Laz, who do you fancy to win this race on Sunday?
I think it's a more open race this year. As I've said before, the teams that have taken people like Abby Smith, who's gone World Tour, who won last year by over 2 minutes, teams like that that have taken the riders and take them into Europe, they're now not in the race. So the opportunity is there for other riders to step up. And among those, obviously, are the junior riders. You've got Zoe Backstead, who I saw dominate the junior women's road race a few weeks ago. And so there are a lot of juniors in the race, like Emma Jeffers, who was a stunning performer in the Tour Series. If Emma gets there at the finish, everybody knows now they've got to watch out. But, you know, you've got loads and loads of great juniors, but you've got the likes of Becky Story as well. We know how strong Becky is. We also know that the Cycler Classic, even though it's looked upon as a off-road, on-road race that's like Paris-Roubaix, it is very hilly. And so that's going to suit someone like Becky. But a rider that has already won it, Rebecca Durrell, she, during the Tour Series, showed, even after she's had her first child, that she's coming back to the form that she had before that. Definitely a name that sits in my mind. Ellen McDermott, she's done well there, podium there. There are so many names. Eoin Roberts from Wales, who was in the break with Zoe Backstead the other day. There are so many riders. It is a very open race. Aluna King, she's riding for Lacole Wahoo. She's won rounds of the Tour Series. You know, she's a very fast girl. Anna Kay, she's a world star in cyclocross. It's going to be an absolute storming race.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the Cycle Classic, it's another race where we'll be proudly inside the peloton as well as at its side, courtesy of our two sponsored teams. Brother UK Orientation Marketing have fielded arguably their strongest squad, including the Junior Olympic Academy trio of Grace Lister, Holly Ramsey, and Izzy Sharp. Now stay tuned on that, because in a moment we'll bring you insights from Mark Botley, who's not only the manager of Brother UK Orientation Marketing, aka Team On Form, but the Cycle Classic is his home race. Now the Team Brother UK LDN squad will include Mark's daughter, the vastly experienced Sian Botley, who'll effectively be racing on home roads. Fran Cutts is another rider with huge experience. Lauren Higham, well, she's one of manager Ian Watson's young guns. And they'll field their new signing, Tiffany Keep, who won at the first time of asking for her new team in a recent crit race. We'll have some strong riders in the peloton, I think, there, Phil, won't we? As well as our neutral service powered by Brother UK crews.
Well worth noting as well, Tim, that Tiffany is also a very experienced mountain biker. So the parkour of the Cycle Classic may well suit her. So let's hope that she might be able to pop up and do something special. And of course, we also know that that race can just bring as many surprises. There's so many technicals on that particular race. It's absolutely the busiest race for neutral service, bar none, in the UK scene. So we know there's lots of punctures. We know that even things like where your car sits in the convoy can be critical to the outcome of the race. What tyre pressures you run, what tyre widths you run, how well your bike is set up, how good a bike handler you are. And then, of course, making sure you don't crash, you avoid all this. I mean, it's got everything. If you're a winner of the Cycle Classic, then I think you really are a worthy winner.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, no one wins a race as demanding as the Cycle Classic by chance. Luck plays a part, of course, but, you know, it's equally fair to say that only the strong survive at a race aptly nicknamed Britain's Paris-Roubaix. Now, if you want to learn more about the role of neutral service powered by Brother UK at the Cycle Classic, then check out episode 11, where Phil and I previewed last year's Women's Cycle Classic with insights from service manager Tony Barry. It's still available on our website, of course, as well as from, you know, all the leading podcast providers. Now, we did promise you insights from Mark Botley, the team manager of Brother UK Orientation Marketing and a former rider who spent years training on the roads now used by the Cycle Classic. Here's Mark then with a personal take on the Cycle Classic and some insights into his squad selection.
Hi, I'm Mark Botley, team manager of Brother UK Orientation Marketing. This weekend, we move on to my local race, a race very close to my heart, the Cycle Classic. I've been going out to kind of recce the race with riders, watching the race, watching the men's race for many, many years. So it's a race I know very, very well. I know every inch of the terrain, and hopefully that kind of inside knowledge, I can pass that on to the riders, and hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have a great race this weekend. The race is really hard, and although everyone talks about the rough sectors, I think it's the country lanes that make up over 80% of the course with their rolling nature that are so decisive. Yes, you do need a bit of luck, but nearly always the top placings are filled by riders in good form who know how to ride in a bunch and how to handle themselves. Our team this year is made up of 7 riders. It's a good mix, with National Junior Squad riders Izzy Sharp, Grace Lister and Holly Ramsey being joined by Jessie Carriage, free from winning the Team Time Trial Championships. And then finally making up the team are Hope Inglis, who is an excellent cyclocross rider. I'm sure she will relish the uniqueness of the race. Ellen Bennett, who proved when winning the Cams Basso race at Redbridge last year that the harder and more punchy the race, the better her chances. Finally, local girl Abby Cooper, who lives 25 miles from the race HQ and is our most inexperienced rider, will be using this event to continue her progression. Having been on placement for the last 6 weeks, as she finishes her degree in physiotherapy, it's difficult to know exactly where she's at. And for Abby, our plans were always really more geared around the second half of the season, where the races, being a lot hillier in nature, will definitely suit her more. We also have a full squad of helpers on the day, and if there's one race where a good background team is essential, then this is it. Fingers crossed, the inevitable whittled down bunch will feature a few of our riders at the death.
And we really are up to speed now with this 2022 campaign. We've looked back at the women's tour. We've looked ahead to the Women's Cycle Classic. But goodness me, the National Road and Time Trial Championships take place before the month is out. They start on Thursday, June the 23rd, and they run until Sunday, June the 26th. They'll be held this year in Dumfries and Galloway, which means it's the first time that the Nationals have been north of the border since 2013. We'll have a time trial, of course. That's on Thursday, June the 23rd at the Crichton Estate. The elite men will race over 44.2 kilometres, which is two laps of the circuit, while the elite women and the under 23 men and women, well, they'll be timed over a single lap of 22.1 kilometres. British Cycling described the loop as a fast course, quote, featuring just 141 metres of climbing. On Friday, June the 24th, we'll have the circuit races, which for my money, actually I was about to say that the circuit races were the most exciting events at last year's National Championships in Lincoln. I don't know if you remember Joe Tindley, you know, just riding off the front and dominating the women's race, and then Harry Tanfield, Ethan Hayter and Lewis Askey going wheel to wheel for an hour in a thrilling men's race. Now, I'm sure Harry still wonders how he didn't win that race. Ethan Hayter seemed to come from nowhere to pass Harry on the line. This year's 1 kilometre course passes McClellan Castle, a 16th century fortress, and looks set to provide another atmospheric setting for the 1 kilometre course. This year's 1 kilometre course, which passes McClellan Castle, a 16th century fortress, looks set to provide another atmospheric setting for the National Circuit Race Championships, and both elite men and elite women will race for an hour plus five laps. All of these events, of course, are scene setters for the road races, which will close the show on Sunday the 26th. They start and finish in Castle Douglas, which Tour Series fans will remember from last year. The course includes two loops, a long loop of 22.9 kilometres and a short loop of 13.7 kilometres, and each of those loops passes through Castle Douglas. The elite men will race for 201 kilometres, four laps of the long loop, plus eight laps of the short loop. The elite women will race for 128 kilometres, two laps of the long loop, six laps of the short loop. It's a race that doesn't lack star quality. Ben Swift from Ineos Grenadiers, the reigning men's champion, will be back to defend his crown, as will Pfeiffer Georgie, the women's champion, for DSM. The defending time trial champions, Ethan Hayter of Ineos Grenadiers and Anna Henderson of Jumbo Visma, are expected back as well. Now, the rest of the field is pretty much a who's who of British road racing. Alex Dowsett of Israel Premier Tech, for example, already a six-time winner of the British men's time trial crown. Alex will be back looking for a seventh title. Joss Loudon of Uno X, a former UCI World Hour record holder. Connor Swift from Arkea Samsic, who of course won the national title riding for a domestic team. He won it in the colours of Madison Genesis back in 2018. Well, Connor will be back too. Mark Cavendish tops the bill, former World Road Race champion, winner of 34 Tour de France stages. Phil, you must be looking forward to this. Last year we saw the Nationals right at the end of the season, didn't we, as a sort of exclamation mark. This year they'll return to their traditional mid-season slot. Which do you prefer?
I don't know. I actually quite liked it at the end of the season. Could it kind of give everyone that sort of thing to look forward to? Everyone's done all their racing, got all their fitness, and this is sort of the big hurrah, wasn't it? That if you can end your season, what a way to end, by securing the national champions jersey. So I don't know, something in me says the end of the season, but you know, it is what it is. I always love the road champs. You do get this very unique situation where, of course, everyone's not on a trade team, but they sort of still are on a trade team, and you can really see who wants it, who doesn't. So I noticed on the circuit champs, for example, that Joe Tindley, she's got a full squad there, an absolute full complement of riders there. Cams Basso have equally on the men's circuit champs. Of course, we've got Matt Bostock with the form that he's shown in the Tour Series. He's going to be pretty tough to beat. And with, I think, have got about five riders in total on the day, which will mean they will be able to kind of really ride as a team and ride as a squad. So you kind of get this, although we're all in this for ourselves, there is a bit of a team thing going on. But I think the blue ribbon's surely got to be the road races and the time trial. And looking, you know, Ineos Grenadiers bringing over the big guns. We've got Mark Cavendish racing. We've got all the big names fundamentally coming it still is something, isn't it, to have your national champions jersey. It still means something, even to these World Tour riders, that they would come back to the UK, to Dumfries and Galloway, to see whether they can still get it. There's some kudos to having your national jersey, I think, still on a World Tour team, and they all still want it.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And, you know, hats off to Cavendish after all that he's achieved, the 34 Tour de France stage wins, the World Championship, the monument victory at Milan-San Remo. The national championships really do matter to Cavendish, don't they? He's here year in, year out, and of course in 2013, won the thing. Larry, last year's nationals were absolutely spectacular on that Lincoln course. Is that going to be a tough act to follow?
I think Lincoln's always a tough act to follow. You have to almost have a race like the Cycle Classic, which is, again, very unique to compete with something like that. But the nationals this year, you've just got to look at the number of riders that are coming in from Europe and the number of riders that we've got going into Europe. I mean, another half a dozen or a dozen this year have gone over there. You know, guys like Sam Watson, for example. And they're making their mark. They're winning races. So to see all these guys, I think I counted about 30 of them who are based in Europe coming over here. Whereas before, sometimes you would get maybe two or three or half a dozen. But to have 30 of them, it's not like the old days where they might form a little combine to compete against the British riders. The British riders are now competing against the guys who are in a brutal battle, if you like, themselves, to get those stripes. The course, from what I understand, is tough, wearing down, but not particularly like Lincoln, where you've got the cobbles and the steep climb. There's a little bit of a kicker on the finishing circuit. For someone like Cavendish, for example, that kicker probably won't be much of a problem. Cavendish could well be there at the finish. But if he is, you've got guys like Ethan Vernon, who's already had a pro win in a bunch sprint. So you've got a lot of fast guys. So it's very hard to predict, but it's going to be one hell of a race.
Well, look, thanks, guys. I mean, we've covered a whole range of topics there. The season, I think we can safely say, is now in top gear. As if the Women's Tour, the Women's Cycle Classic, the National Championships weren't enough for June, we'll squeeze in the Otley Grand Prix before the month is out. July will bring two more rounds of the National Road Series, the Lancaster Grand Prix on July the 17th, and then the only stage race on this year's National Road Series calendar, the Manx International, which runs from July 22nd to July the 24th. We'll also have further rounds of the National Road Series, including Ilkley and Barnsley. And then there's the small matter of the Commonwealth Games, with a little help, I think, from Neutral Service, powered by Brother UK. Phil, can you tell us a bit more about that? I think you've given the green light to Tony to help out at the Commonwealth Games.
Tony has actually provided support to the Commonwealth Games for a long time and across many disciplines, actually. Because of the way that the Commonwealth and Olympics work, basically the cars can't be branded. The cars might look familiar, but they won't have their branding on, or it will be covered up effectively. But yeah, without a doubt, Tony and his team will be out there providing that. And of course, I'll be over on the Isle of Man 3 days. So we're providing some financial support for the 3-day race there, including getting the cars over. And we provided a little bit of additional financial support for our teams to get over there. So that will be very, very exciting. And yeah, looking forward to that.
Brilliant. Great stuff. I mean, a final bit of breaking news. Grace Lister of Brother UK Orientation Marketing has been selected by Team England to compete for the senior squad on the track at the upcoming Commonwealth Games. Not bad for a junior. Chapeau to Grace. We're wishing all the luck in the world to Brother UK sponsored Rebecca Richardson for her assault on the Haute Route Alps, a grueling closed road stage race that concludes with a timed descent of the mythical Alpe d'Huez. Rebecca will be riding for the No Man campaign, which aims to eliminate the 5% of cancers caused by the human papillomavirus, or HPV. Special thanks to Rebecca for taking over our Instagram channel with Phil on stage 4 of the Women's Tour. And thanks also to Daisy May Barnes for Brother UK Orientation Marketing for organising the insights from her manager, Mark Botley, that we heard earlier. Phil, Larry, thank you very much indeed for joining me. And thanks to everybody out there listening.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.